Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. The time is 1:03. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We are the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. If you listen to our last show, it was during the last week of the finals week at Richland College, and at the time I wasn't sure what the schedule would be for the summer months. I'm trying to at least have an hour or two-hour show during the summer months. However, we have a number of both high school and college classes given in the day, so we've kind of had to rearrange the schedule. I normally present this show on Wednesdays between the hours of 3 and 5. However, most of my listeners are actually listen to this show via podcast. So what I've decided to do is, when there's a hole in the schedule like there is right now, there's roughly an hour, I will present a show, whatever I have for that segment, and then really, I'm going to basically play it by ear. I'm going to probably have another show later in this week. It depends on the schedule and what I have on my plate. Today I'd like to talk about a story that has been in the news all last week. It will be in the news this week and for months to come. And that's the fact that the bank J.P. Morgan and Company, the largest U.S. bank, and probably the most profitable and most successful and well-managed bank, last week, well, actually 2 weeks ago, announced the fact that it had lost over $2 billion. That's $2 billion in one of its subsidiaries in London. And the reason why this is important and it's getting a lot of attention is not only the fact that J.P. Morgan is the largest U.S. bank and is well-managed bank. Like many banks, were forced to accept bailout money. Many of the banks really did not need the bailout money, even though they got it. But their chief executive officer, Jamie Dimon, who is well-respected within the industry, he has been a strong advocate of less regulation in banking. See, what's happened as a result of the Dodd-Frank bill is a whole slew of regulations, and they're in the process of finalizing many of these rules. There's been a significant increase in the bank regulation, and this is going to cost you and me money, because the banks obviously have to hire people to comply with a whole host of more regulations of the industry. Now, let me make clear, if you're familiar with my own philosophy, that if you listen to past shows, I'm a classical liberal, or what's referred to in the United States as a libertarian. I really do not favor at all government intervention into the U.S. economy, or for that matter, abroad. I really want limited government, a much smaller government, and the less regulation, the better. I'm also very much not in favor for having any bank bailouts at all. If a bank is truly insolvent, it should be closed by the federal government. The American people do not want banks to be bailed out with U.S. taxpayer money. That's very, very clear. That's probably one of the top three reasons for the fact that we have a large Tea Party movement in the United States. Now, the Tea Party movement, their main issue is to cut is government spending is out of control, and we need to cut government spending. That's probably their number one issue. But following close behind, and one of the reasons for the Tea Party movement, is we do not want the socialization of losses being picked up by the American people. What should have happened during the financial crisis is depending on who was the regulator of the financial institution that was failing, is it should have those financial institutions that were insolvent, namely their liabilities more than exceeded their assets. If that was the situation, that financial institution should be closed. And that is exactly what was done for many, many smaller of the banks. The real problem or issue, and it's a continuing issue, is you have some financial institutions, such as the Bank of America, such as Citibank, that are so big and are interrelated with many, many, many other financial institutions. They are called too big to fail. In other words, the federal government is not capable of winding those institutions down. Now, I'm not saying either Bank of America or Citibank would fail today, but depending on a point in time, one of the primary responsibilities, for example, for Federal Reserve chartered banks, the Federal Reserve has the responsibility of regulating and supervising those banks. And where they do periodically, you will have bank regulators going over the transactions and the financial records and the books of these banks. And where you have a situation where a bank is insolvent, and it's a small, medium-sized, even very large banks, what normally happens is those banks will be closed, and the assets, and usually what happens, another bank buys them. Arrangements are made, and that the word you hear today in the Dodd-Frank bill, and I'm for it, and so is Jamie Dimon, is a resolution authority. That's authority to do this, to close down those financial institutions. Now, I need to make something very, very clear at the top. Where a financial there are two types of problems that banks can't, and I'm talking commercial banks here. And let me make something very, very clear. J.P. Morgan is primarily a commercial bank. Those are banks that what the average American would consider a bank is what technically is called a commercial bank. They need to be distinguished from investment banks such as Goldman Sachs. Now, at one time, it was very clear. Either you were a commercial bank or a investment bank. You had what's called the Glass-Steagall Act, and it by law required that commercial banks could not be investment banks, and equally investment banks could not be commercial banks. Now, what investment banks do is they will trade for their own accounts. They also do merger and acquisitions. They provide a number of services to their clients, including investment and portfolio management. And they also, like I said, they will invest their own money in investments. So it's entirely different business. Contrast that with a commercial bank that is really a depository institution where when you, for example, open either a savings account or a checking account, those are deposits in the bank. And that's totally different from an investment bank that's really taking – now, what's more riskier? Well, it depends. The commercial bank is in the business of making primarily short-term loans. And you have – to the extent that you have strong standards – you'll have good loans. To the extent you have weak standards, you could have more riskier loans. Now, contrast that with an investment bank that is really investing not only their client money but their own money in investments that could be a lot riskier and could use leverage, which is borrowed money, and many of them did, and many of them ran into trouble using. You know, one of the reasons a number of investment banks went out of business is they were, one, highly leveraged, namely the transactions that they were engaged with used borrowed money, and we're talking over 20, 30, 40 to 50 to 1. Now, the reason they do that is to the extent that the trade goes well, they make large profits, and their executives and their traders and the people that work for those investment banks, even though they will get large bonuses, and we're talking million dollar bonuses if they're profitable. Conversely, where they lose money, and they did, and several of them went out of business, Lehman being one. I'm not going to go over what happened in 2008 because I really want to focus in on this, what's happening in Chase and why it's important. But I want you to get clear of what's an investment bank versus a commercial bank, because J.P. Morgan Chase & Company is a commercial bank. That's their primary business. They're a depository institution. They're getting, you know, when you're opening your checking account, you're making a deposit. You can be opening a savings account, you're making a deposit. And what the bank, commercial banks do in is they have to lend. The way they make money is to lend it out to, primarily businesses, but also the, you know, clients of their own bank. They're in the business of making loans. So that's in the way of bank background. And before I forget, I have a companion blog for this radio show, and that's the name of the blog is pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, P-R-O-N-K, pops, P-O-P-S, dot wordpress.com. And the reason I'm really emphasizing it here is I have accumulated or aggregated probably 15 to 20 videos relating to various aspects and background for this story. And what I normally do, this is really a one-segment show, so this will probably be only an hour show. But that's first of all where you go to listen to the show. At the very top, I'll have a link to for not only this show but all past shows that you can go to. But once you scroll through those links below it, for every segment, what I do is I provide my listeners additional information about whatever I'm covering. And it's not just videos that are on YouTube. It can be articles, links to articles or excerpts from articles. It can be charts. It could be photographs. I provide information that I think that what I use, and it's selective. I don't provide everything that I've looked at, but I try to select what I think are important pieces that provide you different aspects or background information that was important to me in preparing the segment. But it's also for your, to the extent that you're interested in the subject and want to explore it more, you can go to those, you can watch those videos as well as read the articles and form your own opinion. Because this is a very, I debated long and hard whether or not I was going to cover this story, because it's very much a story that is developing, it's breaking right now. We know that J.P. Morgan Chase, the bank, is disclosed, they've lost at least $2 billion. Now, $2 billion for most people, including me, is a lot of money. But keep in mind that last year, for example, the bank made $19 billion worth of their profits. So even though they lost a lot of money, I'm not trying to minimize it, they have the financial wherewithal to ride out this. And you got to keep in mind that the outfit that lost, the subsidiary in London that lost this money, for many years made a lot of money. And that needs to be kept in mind as well. So even though Diamond, he's been in the news the last couple of weeks when he made this announcement, he was very, very clear that this was not a well-thought-out investment. It wasn't reviewed thoroughly. It wasn't executed properly. It wasn't monitored properly. And it really gives J.P. Morgan a black eye. Now, what happens in a situation like this is exactly what should happen in free market capitalism. First of all, the people that were responsible for this major loss, for all practical purposes, have been either fired from the company or resigned from the company and are no longer there. Once the mistake was discovered and the trade really was going bad, heads rolled, and that's what happens. If you're in any company, any business, and you make a mistake like this, it's very unlikely you're going to keep your job. And that includes not only the people directly responsible for this loss, but also the people above them that had immediate responsibility to make sure that this didn't happen. And keep in mind that this bank has the reputation for being well-managed, as not only as a commercial banking firm, but also well-managed in terms of managing risk. Now I'm going to get. There's a lot more to this story, but I need to give you some background information to set it up, and the reason why it's getting a lot of attention is the whole subject of bank regulation. I really think needs to be revisited. I think anyone that has looked at the Dodd-Frank Act, there's some things in the Act which I agree with. Diamond agrees with, and most people in the financial industry agree with. But there are a lot of other things that I don't agree with. And one of them is the fact that that act was a direct response or reaction from the fact that we had major bailouts and we had some major failures of firms. But the fact that the American people were really upset with the bailouts of the banking industry, that they didn't want the bailouts, and that needs to be said. They don't want it. And I think, frankly, what this act does is institutionalize too big to fail and expands it. So I think what's going to happen as a result of the fact that this is going to be used by the people that want more and more government regulation to that, in a way, in their mind at least, boost supports their case for it. My reaction to that is, well, excuse me, you have all this banking regulation now. It doesn't catch the mistakes. Even the people involved you know, what you got to understand, investment involves human beings, and human beings are going to make mistakes. Sometimes they benefit from them, sometimes they lose. And you have big mistakes like this when procedures are not followed. So even though you might have the best system on paper and you have the people in place, mistakes will be made, and eventually what happens is the mistake is caught. And that's exactly what has happened in this case. And as a result, people lost their jobs. But more importantly is J.P. Morgan Chase's stock has significantly gone down. The last I looked, by more than $10, they've lost more than 10% of what they were worth prior to this. And that's what a free market is all about. You know, you get the rewards when what you're doing is successful, including your investment, and you also pay the penalties when you make mistakes like that. Now, this is a huge mistake, and we don't. And the reason why I'm not going to get too detailed on it, it's clear if you listen to not only what Diamond says, but what many of the commentators are saying. We really don't know all the details yet. This will be a subject of a congressional investigation as well as an investigation by the regulators, the OCC, the Office of the Comptroller of Currency, is in charge of regulating this bank. So there's going to be investigations of it. More details would be coming out. And why there's been some general information released about it, I don't really think anyone knows. Well, I think the only people that I really think know what happened work for the bank, and they're not talking. I mean, most of their time they're talking to regulators that are digging in, trying to figure out what exactly happened. And what the key issue seems to be revolving around is what's called the Volcker Rule. And let me spend a minute. And that's named after former Chairman of the Federal Reserve, Paul Volcker, who was Chairman of the Federal Reserve under Reagan. His rule is this, and I'm simplifying it, and the wording of the rule has not been finalized. As a matter of fact, it's in the process of being finalized right now as we speak, is that commercial banks should not engage in proprietary trading. What is proprietary trading? That is where the bank uses its own money to invest, speculate, or bet on an outcome. Now, people that are obviously critics and favor more and more bank regulation, they will say, well, they're betting their own money. They're gambling. Some will characterize it as speculation. Others, obviously, the bank's point of view is an investment. But what Volcker is saying, you should not do what investment banks do, namely have proprietary trading. That is not the function of a commercial bank. You should not engage in proprietary trading, where you're betting or making, you're using the assets of the bank, and you're making investments where you are. I prefer speculation. You're placing a bet or speculating or an investment, taking a position where if you're right, you win. And my strong suspicion is that a good portion of what the London subsidiary of J.P. Morgan Chase were doing was exactly that. But that needs to be determined. Now, the reason why Volcker is making this is a very important point. Commercial banks, that is really should not be, that's not their primary business, and should not be, they shouldn't engage in proprietary trading. Now, here's the problem, and it's very simple. Banks, and this is the case that Diamond and others in the banking industry are making. We need to be able to hedge our positions that we have on our own balance sheet. We also need to make a market for the various securities for our customers. And if you look at the Dodd-Frank bill, hedging as well as making a position in a market for your clients are exceptions to the so-called Volcker rule. Now, what the bank has said is that they were hedging. I'm suspicious of this. Let me just say I'm not necessarily buying it. I'm just trying to tell you that they were engaged in a hedging activities that went bad. They were trying to hedge their loan portfolio, their entire bank's loan portfolio. The reason I'm suspicious with this, normally when you're hedging, it's a much smaller, you're hedging against the position that you have. Now, what's odd about even using this terminology, most, you know, the investments, if you will, that the risk that a bank is, commercial bank now, emphasize commercial bank, like J.P. Morgan Chase does, is they make a loan. You have a risk there, namely of default risk and creditor risk. And if you have strong standing, most of your loans are going to be repaid, but there's some that will go in default. So there is a, now your whole loan portfolio, however, could be subject to interest rate risk, where if the right now, I think it's a fairly safe assumption, sometime in the near to mid-term future, interest rates are going to go up. We saw the same situation in the 70s. It's if I knew the exact date, I wouldn't be talking to you. I'd be acting on it. But for sure, interest rates are heading up. And what happens normally, if that does occur and will occur at some point in time, the prices of existing bonds will go down. So if you're a bank, and to the extent you have in your investment portfolio as part of the assets that you own are bonds, and that could be treasury, and believe me, banks have this. They have treasury securities, I mean treasury bonds, as well as agency bonds. They are running a risk that in some point in the future, and I think near future, interest rates on those bonds, interest rates in general in the market will go up. I've been arguing that, if you listen to past shows, for the simple reason interest rates on Treasury securities are artificially being compressed or suppressed by the Federal Reserve. They're keeping them way lower than they should be, at least 200 to 300, if not 400 basis points. So I think there's a very, very high probability that interest rates in general and across the board are going to go up. When that happens, there's an inverse relationship between the movement of interest rates, in this case going up, and the price of existing or outstanding bonds, they go down. So if you're a financial institution such as a bank, that is a position where you have a good chunk, not all, but a large portion of your asset base is bonds. And if you truly think that interest rates are going up and though the value of those bonds are going to be going down, then you should hedge that position. And that's what the bank is maintaining what they were doing. Namely, they forget about the, you know, even if you had the Volcker Rule, effective and operational, defined, they were engaged in hedging. At least that's the story or narrative that the Diamond and the bank are saying. And I can see that case. You know, especially if I had a large bond portfolio, I definitely would like. But see, here's the thing. You know, how do you deal with that? It's not like it's one bond that you're hedging against. It's an entire portfolio. Now, this is not a show on investments, so I'm not going to get in too much more detail of the investments. What their subsidiary did, is my understanding, they were investing in derivatives of an index, ultimately, what they're trying to do by making this was a, normally if you have risk, you hedge it by doing something that will do the opposite of, so if bank interest rates go up and your long position, namely your bonds, are going to go down, you want to invest in securities such as derivatives of an index that as interest rates go up, that index is going to go up. And supposedly that's what they did. Now, I'm being very general in this because I have not seen a written detailed description, and you're not going to get one until this position is unwound, from J.P. Morgan. Because they're trying to minimize their losses. It looks like it's at least $2 billion. It could go higher. And depending on when interest rates actually what happens, see, it depends on the time period you're talking about, because I truly believe interest rates are going up. Do I think they're going to go up today, next week, next month? Not really, because I'm very much holding the position that the United States economy is going to be going into recession the third and fourth quarter. And what's happening is that you've had a flight of capital from Europe, especially from the pig countries, your Portugal, Spain, Italy, Greece, Ireland. You have a flight of capital looking for safety. And where do they normally go to? The default security that when you're in a situation or financial crisis like this, where the hot money goes is it goes to Treasury securities, which means interest rates on those Treasury securities go down. I hope I'm not losing you, and that's exactly what on new issues, because you have a much greater demand for those securities. Money always has to, you know, people that are, and we're talking billions of dollars, we're talking really trillions of dollars, we're talking flows of money, really you have a limited amount of investments to select from, and one place to go is U.S. Treasury securities. You're not looking for a big return. You're looking primarily for safety, namely to hold their value and maybe pick up 1-2% or depending on how long you want to go, a return. Now, that's not the only asset class to go to. And again, I'm trying to keep this. Remember, this is our primary listeners are students and staff. And I'm not trying to lose you. I'm trying to make the point that the fact that and put it in context. Even though a $2 billion loss by a bank is important and it is a subject of a lot of news, it's not going to break this bank in any fashion at all. They could double, triple those losses. Yes, they will take a hit in their earnings, and they're going to have some losses as a result of this, and so is their stock prices. And that's the way it should work. Mark, that's what I and other economists would call market regulations. The market is working, and if where your management makes mistakes, where they clearly have done that in terms of both supervision as well as not thinking out and reviewing this investment strategy, they pay the price. And the price is losing your job, and the price is losses of earnings, and your price is a falling stock price. Now, there are a lot more, and that's the way it should work. You know, and that's the way it works for hundreds of thousands of businesses. Most of the businesses in the United States cannot get a bailout, shouldn't get a bailout, cannot get a bailout, and that's the way the capital system works. If you're a good manager, a good steward of your resources, and manage your business operations, it should grow and be profitable, and you, the owners of the company, the manager of the and the employees, as well as their customers, will benefit. That's the upside. The negative side is where you've mismanaged your business, you've misallocated your resources, and as a result have lost money, there's a price to be paid. And that price is you may lose your job, you may or will lose bonuses for doing a poor job. And to the extent you're a public company like this bank, your stock prices will go down. There's no involvement of the government. To put it simply, it's none of the government's business. No regulator. The purpose of regulation is not to duplicate the management of that business. To the extent that you're dealing with commercial banks, which first I need to say are the most highly, if not the most highly regulated, very regulated financial institution for a number of reasons. So you have a lot of regulators. They live in that bank in New York, the headquarters, I'm sure also in some of their major branches. The problem is if the own management of this bank was not able to stop it, do you think a regulator could? No, they can't. And we've seen this over and over and over again. Most of these regulators don't have a clue as to what these trading units are doing. They'll try to keep up, but, you know, they have a business. The trading desk has who's ever managing this portfolio and is using traders to execute it, they don't have time to explain it to some, let's say, clueless bureaucrat regulator. All the regulator is there to see is, are you complying with the regulations or the law? That is a factual question. The problem is, the more and more you regulate business, a couple of things happen. Regulation requires more and more people to devote more and more of their time to seeing whether they're meeting. And this is just one of many, many new regulations that Dodd-Frank Act put in. I am against Dodd-Frank. There are some things in it that I truly do support. Mainly what's called that buzzword resolution trust. resolution authority. And that's a phrase, kind of a jargon phrase. What that means is this. Whoever the regulator is, where they find a bank is failing, a bank is insolvent, a bank's liabilities more than exceed its assets, mainly because the assets on the balance sheet of that bank have gone down for whatever reason, we're dealing with a bank that truly is insolvent, not a bank that has a liquidity problem, but is truly insolvent. You want the financial regulators to have the authority in law as well as the financial resources to close that bank down no matter how big they are, no matter how big they are. My problem with the Dodd-Frank, I have a number of problems with it, and that'll be a subject of a separate show probably many weeks from now, but my main problem with it is it extends the too-big-to-fail problem not only to existing depository institutions, it extends it to other financial institutions, including really any business, but insurance companies, pension funds, hedge funds. That is really that's expanding regulation where many of those institutions are, not all of them, but many of them are already regulated by the states. We've had a massive failure of bank regulation and supervision in 2008 and 2009. We had the regulations, but they weren't enforced. And the biggest example of that is GSEs, the government support. I always get the acronym wrong. Government supported enterprises, and that's Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And they're still, the government was in the mortgage business, and those financial institutions were regulated. People testified by Congress that they were taking excessive risk, totally leveraged. And what was happening? The politicians, namely the very politicians for which this namely Chris Dodd and Barney Frank, the very politicians that this act is named after, were the very politicians that were protecting Fannie Mae and Fannie Mac. That's where a lot of this, not all the problem, but a lot of the problem lies. There are other guilty parties in this. One being the Federal Reserve that really caused this bubble by its accommodative or easy money policy. You know, a thread that should really run through this conversation is government intervention requires more government intervention, requires more government intervention, requires more government intervention. It seems that we have a political class, mainly the Progressive Democratic Party in Congress, that really can't get that through their head. Cannot literally parse that out. We didn't have a failure of the markets. What we had, a failure, government failure. We had crony capitalism. It was the government, namely the Federal Reserve, that was providing the easy money that fueled the real estate boom. It was the government that was insisting that the subprime loans be given to people that couldn't pay it. You know, you got to trace it back. And yes, there are financial institutions, including investment banks, commercial banks, mortgage bankers, real estate agents, they all made money on this. And I don't begrudge them a penny of that money. But if you trace it right back to where the failure was, it's squarely in our federal government. They fueled this real estate bubble, this boom, by easy money. That is irrefutable. They caused many, many, if not most, of this subprime loan, and it's both under Republicans and Democrats. I will say this to defend the Republicans a little bit. They did try to get the attention of the powers that be in Congress and in the Senate, and it was when Barney Frank and Dodd were running the show. One was a senator, one was head of the committee. House committee that has responsibility for this, they forked the regulation. And it's not the regulation, it forked more stronger, stringent regulation of Fannie Mae and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Because what they did is bought up those, they bought up and packaged those securities and invested in them. And there's still a problem today. The government needs to get out of the mortgage business. The sooner the better. We should close down Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. It should be sold off, and the government should get out of it, because it caused the problem by insisting that both mortgage banks and commercial banks lend to people that would never have qualified for these the so-called subprime mortgages. They're called subprime for a reason. They don't mean the prime. You have prime loans where people have the down payments, where they have the income, and the mortgage is justified. You know, at one time in this country, to get a loan on a house was difficult. You had to have a 20% down payment. You had to prove that you worked and earned the income. It was not easy. Why? Because the commercial banker was responsible for that. His success or failure at a bank depended on making good loans. Now, how did that system get replaced? The federal government, under the Community Reinvestment Act, pressured the banks. It started really, although the law was passed under Carter, it really was pushed under Clinton. And they twisted the arms of these banks to make these loans and make more of them. And Bush did the same thing. The rage was, we want to increase the home ownership, percentage of home ownership in the United States. So even those people that could not put, forget about 20% down, couldn't put 10% down or 5% down, in some cases couldn't put any down. Many of them didn't even have jobs, forget about income, so-called no-doc loans. You know, normally you had to document your salary. Namely, you had to bring in a pay stub or a letter from your employer, you know, where you were employed, and bring in tax returns. You know, at one time it was very difficult. I'm not saying impossible, but you had to meet certain standards. Why? In the good old days, because banks insisted that their employees follow these rules. It was only the intervention of the federal government, both in the Community Reinvestment Act, which really forced banks to make loans to people that never under existing standards would get a dime. And then you had the Federal Reserve making it basically pumping money, having an easy money policy. So it gets back to that. We've had and the failure of the government to really its regulators to enforce the regulations. The mess was, we had a big bubble that burst in 2007 in real estate. And fortunately, not so much in Texas, but in certain other states, for example, Florida, Arizona, California, New Mexico, you had that bubble. And for the first time in over 70 years, you had a collapse of real estate. People were flipping. Well, I don't want to revisit the real estate bubble thing. But I needed to give you some history, some background. The reason for the Dodd-Frank, the intention of the Dodd-Frank Act is to stop many, if not all, of the problems that resulted in that real estate bubble. And one of the things that happened was many of the large banks that were heavily invested in mortgage-backed securities got hurt. Namely, those mortgage-backed securities went down in value, significantly went down in value. And what happened? The Federal Reserve bought those securities from the banks. They bailed them out. They also lend them money. Now, I need to say this real quickly. One of the primary functions of the Federal Reserve, namely the Central Bank of the United States, is to be a lender of last resort. I have no problem with the central bank being a lender of last resort where it's providing liquidity for banks that have a liquidity problem, namely they are still solvent. In other words, what I mean by liquidity problem is when you have a run on a bank or where you have a situation where your cash position is such that you can't meet current demand for it, you have a liquidity problem. You're short cash. So what one of the functions of a central bank, namely the Federal Reserve in the United States, is to be a lender of last resort, provided that financial institution or depository institution is still solvent. That's fine. But the other situation is where the bank is insolvent, namely its assets have dramatically decreased to the point where its liabilities not only exceed its assets, you wipe out the owner's equity, you have, quote, an insolvent bank. In that situation is not the responsibility of the federal government or the Federal Reserve to bail out that bank or let it continue to exist. The primary responsibility should be to close it down. And in most cases, I've lost count of how many banks in the last several years have been closed. I know it's, my guess is probably 800 to 900. I could be low, have been closed. Compare that, though, with the during the Great Depression, where close to 10,000 banks were closed. And even there, the reason most of those banks were closed is, again, government intervention. You see, a reason why most of the you had so many banks, over a third of the banks in the United States failed during the 1930s, is both the primarily on the state level, you had what's called unitary banking. In other words, a bank could only be in one location. That was a big mistake, but that was, again, the government interfering in the marketplace, interfering with the marketplace. They wanted to discourage competition. So, you know, what makes sense is to have branch banking. Why? You want a diverse portfolio of both depositors and loans. That's what makes sense. I'm all for branch banking. But no, the government, namely primarily state governments, insisted that if you wanted a state bank charter, you could get a state bank charter, but it could only be for one location. What happened? When we got into the Great Depression, most of those banks failed. Contrast that with what happened in Canada. How many banks do you think failed in Canada during the Great Depression? I'll tell you what that number is. It's zero. Zero. They're not that far away from us. What's different? What's different? It's simple. Canada permitted branch banking. You see, the point I'm trying to make, invariably, if you do the analysis and trace it back, it's government intervention of the economy 9 times out of 10 are the reason for the mess we're in today. And that's exactly what we have. You know, what's really a lot of the pro-regulation crowd are big time using the $2 billion loss of the bank as a reason to, we need more regulation of the banks. We need a stricter Volcker rule. No, we don't. You see, I know it's not going to happen, but I'm very much for the marketplace being the regulator. You see, what we have in the United States today is FDIC, Federal Depository Insurance. And you can argue the fact it's here to stay. What happens is the banks have to pay a premium into that fund. Why? To pay that. Every bank has to pay into a fund that's used in turn to close failing banks, namely banks that become insolvent. Now, who ultimately pays for that? The clients of the bank or customers of the bank. So it's really the well-run banks, the successful banks, that are paying for that insurance. Now, what the regulators and what many that advocate more and more regulation like to say is, well, you know, they're a depository institution and they're covered by this insurance, and because of that, it's public money is involved. They can't do this. We need more regulation to make sure that they're not doing this. We've had more and more and more regulation. It gets worse, worse, and worse, and worse. So, you know, I'm not against regulation per se. But did you really think a government bureaucrat, and that's what a bank regulator is, if the own management, the people that are highly motivated to make sure that the investments are profitable and work, make a mistake, do you really think the bank regulator is going to catch that? Because if you do, you're naive. You're naive. And the real problem, the real sad thing about this whole thing is, who truly gets punished with more and more regulation? Who pays for it? First of all, you do. You do. Banks will raise their fees and charge more fees. Why? They have to hire people to comply with the regulation. But what it really truly hurts are the small and community banks across this nation that we're not involved with all the, we're not the cause of the problem. It is the small, medium-sized community banks that are truly get hurt with more and more regulation. You know, I listen to many of the, I put many of those videos on, and you will see people go on and on, oh, we need more regulation. Bad, bad bank. Regulation is not the answer. What you know what the answer is? The big banks fail. They go bankrupt. They go insolvent. You don't keep them in business. You don't bail them out. And I make an important point. You do provide liquidity for banks that have a liquidity problem. However, where a bank is clearly insolvent, you close it. That's the way it should work. It gets shut down. And what really happens most of the time is another bank buys it out or it's sold. That's how the market should work. Yes, we do have government involvement in this. I'm not against bank regulation per se either. But we need to clear out the issues. You know, a lot of people, they they lost $2 billion. That's a lot of money. It is a lot of money. I'm not saying it's not a lot of money, but let's put it in context, ladies and gentlemen. You weren't complaining, well, some people were, when the bank, you know, the bank makes billions of dollars every quarter. Now, obviously, it's going to take a hit last quarter, this quarter, and probably the next. But it's still going to, you know, I've seen estimates, it's still going to make somewhere between $15 billion and $20 billion this year. That's rather iffy now. But that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. And I think they're going to bounce back. And they're going to learn from the mistakes. You see, I'm not in favor of what the Dodd-Frank Act did. And that's a subject of a separate show. But what really gets me upset is people, and I understand why they're doing it, they're using the loss, and it's a big loss, of one bank, the most successful bank, largest bank, probably one of the most well-run banks in the world, not just the United States. Everyone is human. Everyone is going to make mistakes. Some people learn from their mistakes. Some people don't. A lot of people hide their mistakes. And that's exactly what many of the Democratic, many of the Democrats in Congress are doing. Now, I don't have in this section, but I could show you testimony of regulators in front of committees where the committee, all the Democrats mainly blacks, but also Barney Frank would castigate the regulators for trying to do their job and asking, why are you pointing to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac? They have done a terrific job. No, they didn't. The United States taxpayers have lost hundreds of billions, not two, not ten, hundreds of billions of dollars because of this Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac nonsense that primarily the Democrat, that was a crony capitalism outfit. Many of the former government employees, they went to work and made millions of dollars on this. Those two outfits should be shut down. And I'm asking, where is the right now, that is something that needs to be reformed, needs to be shut down. The sooner the better. And I've heard very little, if anything, from the current administration as well as the current Treasury Secretary as to how they're going to resolve the mess, the ongoing mess of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Requiring bailout after bailout after bailout. That's what should be getting some attention. Literally nothing. No mention of it. And they were a big part of the problem, a big enabler of the problem. And that's just another example where government should not get in business. And that's what these quasi-government private, this public-private partnership invariably leads to, where the public, namely the American taxpayer, has to bail out or make whole the losses of those two financial institutions. Yet you hear very little, if nothing, on it. The silence is deafening on this subject. And that's really two financial institutions that need to be wrapped up, sold off, and the government say never again. Will that happen? It remains to be seen. It's definitely not going to happen during the current administration. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac need to be liquidated in an orderly manner, sold off to the private sector, and keep the government out of the mortgage area, period. You know, they had some use, you know, there can be some case made for the early days of Fannie Mae. But they have, the damage that those two institutions have done to the U.S. economy are major. And a lot of it can trace back directly to the politicians in charge that protected those institutions. Little is said about that, because they were a big, see what the banks did with that, were forced to make the commercial banks, the mortgage bankers did that made these mortgage loans, is they would sell it off, sell it, get it off the books. They knew it was garbage. They knew it was, pardon my language, they knew it was crap. They knew it was high risk. So as quick as they could, they wanted to sell that into to outfits like Freddie Mae and Fannie Mac to package it. You know, it was a big racket. Fortunes were made. Not only in commercial bankage, mortgage bankings, by the credit agencies, by the investment bankers, and by the politicians. Fortunes were made. Very few, if any, have gone to jail. Have you noticed that? Because what we're dealing with, ladies and gentlemen, is massive fraud, massive fraud. Remember, when you fill out an loan application for a mortgage loan, you can't make you can't lie on it, you can't misrepresent it, and neither can the loan officers or people involved in that transaction do the same. That is committing fraud, or you're aiding and abetting fraud. And that's what happened on a massive scale, massive scale. Yet we've seen no prosecutions of the executive officers of these institutions at all? Have you seen it in the news? And guess what? You're not going to. Why? Well, you know, it might lead to another financial crisis if it really went after the bad guys. Has it dawned on you when people are committing crimes, and that's what we're talking about. We're not talking small scale. This was institutionalized criminal behavior, massive fraud. And you're not going to stop it by not slapping some of these peoples with $100 million fines, the financial institutions. The executives involved on this should, and many of them have lost their jobs, but many of them should have been prosecuted for this. And so should the people that were getting these loans. And so, same thing with the credit agencies that's saying these were you know, AAA because they're part of a package. So I wanted to spend and I have right now an hour on this. See, I have a different take of it. You know, I'm not coming from it from we need more and more regulation, because more and more regulation has not worked. You see, when you say that, you're relying on, you think you get a regulator that are smarter than the people that have a real strong incentive to make a lot of money. You hire real smart people to do this. Now, sometimes they make mistakes and do dumb things. Now, depending on their involvement on the situation, some of them have already been fired, and they should have been. Others that, let's say, had a good track record up to then, you keep them around. And I think there's a certain amount of that going on now. But people have had to retire. People have had to resign. People have been terminated. And we're just on the early stages of this. But and let me relate this to something else. And I'll wrap up this show. I truly believe the United States economy is going to be going into recession. Now, I could be off on the timing. I truly think it'll be the third and fourth quarter. It could be earlier, could be a little later. But I think we're in for at least two quarters of negative growth in the gross domestic product. And the primary reason I'm saying this is that if you look at the history of past recessions, not all, but almost all past recessions, you will see concurrent with the recession, or right just before the recession, you will see a period of steeply rising crude oil prices, as well as gasoline prices. It's a matter of fact, uncanny. Now, I did not put that chart in this segment's notes, but in past shows when I've showed this, it's very clear. You see this spike upward, and that's exactly what we've had. Now, it was a gradual but continuing going up, up, and up since virtually from the day Barack Obama took office. Recently, in the last four weeks, gas prices have gone down. And I was expecting that. I really thought my initial prediction was through July, early July, that gas prices would have gone up and spiked then, or hit a peak then, and then gone down. I was a little bit off. Let's say I was about 75 days off for a lot of reasons. But that's a detail. The point is, if you look back for the last six, seven, eight recessions in the United States, you will see this pattern. It is uncanny when you look at the numbers. And while it's not 100% certainty, with a high probability, and the problem with this indices, or if you're looking at the, for example, crude prices, the pattern of prices over time, or you could use gasoline prices as well. It's hard to get the timing perfect, but the bottom line message is this, and if you think about it, you'll understand why the economy goes into recession. It costs me, it costs you more money every time we go to the tank than it did just 40 months ago when Barack Obama took the oath of office. To refresh your memory, gasoline in Texas then was between, depending on which gas station you go to, somewhere between $1.70 to $1.90. I'm giving you a broad range. Today, it's I filled my tank Friday. What was it, Friday or Saturday? Last week. It was $1.49. Not quite double. A couple of weeks ago, several weeks ago, it got as high as $3.90. So we've had, now if you've listened to past shows, the reason for that, and the reason why I'm bringing this up, is both investment banks and commercial banks are in the business of making money. They hire people to make money, to make investments. And one of the investments they make, or if you prefer speculation or bets, is they invest, they make bets in the future price of crude oil. They make it in a whole range of commodities, but one of the biggest ones is crude oil. And I've said it once, and I'll say it again. Somewhere between $1.50 to $2 of the price of gasoline today at the pump is still due to speculation. And what I mean by that is at one time, like over 10 years ago, if you look at the volume of future contracts, a little over 70% were done by people that are actually producing or using the commodity. In this case, either producing or using the oil, refining the oil. The remainder were done by, quote, speculators. And I'm not against speculation per se, because you need speculation to have liquidity in the market. So when someone that was willing to enter in the contract, one side of that futures contract, I'm not against speculation, but what has happened to those markets is today 70 to 80% of the people that have those contracts are not the commercial producers or users of the commodity, in this case, crude oil. They are speculators. In other words, it's totally flipped the percentages. The minority of the owners or the people engaging in buying or selling future contracts, they're actually hedging. They have a legitimate reason for hedging. Only a small minority, less than 30%, fall in that category. It's gone totally other. It's flip flop. It's the total reverse. Over two-thirds to up to, I've heard, as high as 80%. It's going to vary from day to day, hour to hour. But most of those are, quote, fall in the category of speculative. They do not want to take delivery of that commodity. They are strictly gambling or speculating. They'll consider themselves as investors. And who are those people and why are they doing it? There are investment bankers and commercial bankers engaging in proprietary trading. And why I'm adamantly against that is, who does that hurt? It hurts you and me. It hurts every American out there. Every American out there. And invariably what it does, it is one of several reasons why this economy will go into a recession, namely as defined as two negative quarters of declining growth, negative growth in the GDP, a decline in the growth, real domestic, gross domestic product. What caused it? Again, the Federal Reserve, namely the Central Bank of the United States, first keeping engaging in a very easy or accommodative monetary policy and suppressing interest rates to near zero. So it makes it very cheap, very inexpensive for both commercial banks and investment banks. Very cheap to engage in this, and they do it with borrowed money. In other words, they don't have to pay the full value of the contract. They pay like 5-6%. It's going to vary depending on what commodity and what exchange. But you're getting a lot of leverage, a lot of money, and when you have a lot of leverage, when you have a lot of money available and a lot of leverage available, and your job is to make money for that financial institution. Greed sets in. It's human nature. What are they going to do? They're going to speculate in commodities. They drove up the price of gasoline. And how are the American people going to pay for it? We're going to have another recession. We're going to have more unemployment. So don't take away that I'm strictly hard-nosed against regulation. There's good regulation and bad regulation. The problem is, ultimately, what's causing this mess is government intervention in the economy. We should not have a monetary policy that's keeping the interest rate suppressed like this for going on years. Those committee, the Board of Government, Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve, the people that are on the Federal Open Market Committee, are no smarter than you and me. They think they're smarter. They think they can replicate the market. And they interfere in the market by keeping the interest rates artificially low. Now, why are they doing that? You got to connect the dots. You always have to see, you know, why are they doing that? What's the real reason they're doing that? It's very simple, folks. The United States, for the last four fiscal years, have run deficits. In other words, they're spending more than they're taking in from all taxes. For every year, for 4 years, over $1 trillion. In round numbers, 1.4, 1.3, 1.3, and this year, again, 1.3. In other words, the entire presidency of Barack Obama, which ends next January, he will have had deficits totaling $5.3 trillion. That's $5,300 billion. Where are they getting the money to spend to pay their bills? It's simple. The Federal Reserve, yes, some of it isn't by investors. First to say it. I'm not saying the entire 5.3. But a large portion of that is the Federal Reserve with its quantitative easing. And I think we're going to see quantitative easing, which is a fancy word for the government printing or creating money. I know they technically don't print it. They created a keyboard electronically, but it's the same thing. They make it out of thin air. It's fiat currency. And what do they buy? They buy government securities. And then the federal government takes that created money and pays its bills. Guess what? You can't keep doing this. The United States is bankrupt. Is bankrupt. This $2 billion loss is getting a lot of attention with all the media. They're going on and on and on about it. Have you heard any stories really focusing in what's really happened over the Obama administration for when he's been president? No, very little. Now, it's so bad, ladies and gentlemen, that they're talking about another increase in the debt limit. More and more government spending, more and more debt is not the answer. It's insanity. It's fiscal insanity what we're doing. We are taking, we're going to another recession, which means more higher unemployment rates, which means more people unemployed. We have no leadership from Washington at all, from either party, mainly the Democratic Party. Because remember, I have to remind people this, what happened in November 2006? Who won the elections in November 2006? The Democratic Party. Now, why is that important? Why is that important? They won that control of the House and the Senate, and they had it in 2007, 2008, 2009, and 2010. They controlled both houses. And starting in 2009, they also controlled the presidency. Who was responsible for, who has the authority to have money bills? Who has the authority to tax, spend, and borrow? It's the House and the Senate, but primarily the House. Money bills have to originate in the House of Representatives. They are responsible for these huge deficits. They went on a spending spree, totally irresponsible. They rammed in a stimulus package, which was supposed to get the unemployment down and didn't. It was a total failure. And when you combine that with the actions of the Federal Reserve, you're getting what we're getting, going to get real soon. We're going to get another recession, and we're going to get higher unemployment rates. It's not going to get any better. It's going to get worse. Yet, what are we talking today in the news? What has been on every major news station for the last week? J.P. Morgan Chase lost $2 billion. $2 billion. What happened? People at J.P. Morgan lost their jobs. The stock price of J.P. Morgan stock has gone down. And now we have the same folks that gave us the mess, the housing mess, through their laws, through the Community Reinvestment Act, through easy monetary policies, for lax regulation. These same people are calling for more regulation. Their answer for every problem is more government spending, more taxes, and more debt. And why I'm so passionate about this? Who does this really hurt? Really hurt. Really going to hurt. It's the young in the United States. It's the high school and college student that can't find a job. Can't find a job. 16 and 19-year-olds have an unemployment rate of around 25%. 25%. Talk to any college student today that just graduated, ask them, can you find a decent paying job? And the answer is usually no. The fortunate among them find some kind of job way below that doesn't require either a college or a high school education at all. You see, ideas have consequences. Economic policies have consequences. Government intervention into the economy has consequences. And the people that are paying the price for this incompetence in Washington from both political parties, from the so-called ruling elite, are the American people. Are the American people. And we don't have a revenue problem. We have a spending problem. And you have to wake up to that. And until we start balancing the budget, which means cutting spending by over $1,500 billion for the next 3 or 4 years, until we have leadership in Washington that is capable of doing that, and I don't think, I think the Republicans are going to definitely win the House and the Senate. I'm not sure. I think that's more or less a 50-50 proposition. It really shouldn't be, but, I'm trying to be brutally realistic. I think it's really 50-50. Because I've looked at what Romney has to do in terms of the electoral college. Now, the only good thing, and it's not good, If my prediction is right and the economy does enter into another recession and unemployment rates go up again, that is really going to hurt Barack Obama. Now, he is going to have a lot of money. They're going to talk about anything. There's three things that Barack Obama does not want to talk about. One is job creation and his failed record. The second thing is out-of-control spending. The third thing is the impact of these growing deficits. He doesn't want to talk about this. Why? Because it confronts the fact that there are over 20 million, close to 25 million people in the United States today that are looking for a full-time job. They're either unemployed, have been discouraged from looking for a job because they've been looking for months and can't find it, or they've taken a part-time, low-paid job. That's the reason he's going to be defeated. We have a president today. He's been in office 40 months, and there are less people, listen to this, there are less people today working in the United States than the day he took the oath of office. Less people. We are in the hole. I've done some calculations. You know, at the height, the highest point of employment in the United States was November 2007. We had 143.7 million people working. If you add that number plus the number of new entrants that entered the market since he's been president, we're down over 11 million jobs. That's why the unemployment rate is so high. The time is 2:25. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We are the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCC. Now back to the music.